I don't know about you, but I use the term upper decker. I mean, okay, I don't use it like this has happened. But I think it's funny.
I'm never visiting your house.
We don't, let me be clear. We don't make upper deckers, but we do say upper decker every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Just wherever, because I just think the inflection is funny. And I love that part of this cold open. I think that's probably the best part.
Come up here. Let's do a little something. So Meredith and I have just started conversing, and I will say, so Meredith, how was your weekend? What did you do?
Well, I caught my son taking a dump on the upper part of the toilet.
All right.
He calls it an upper decker.
Okay. God.
But it is a typical conference room meeting.
It may be the best part of this whole episode.
Oh, yeah. You don't like this episode? So we are talking about the sixth episode of season six, Mafia, originally airing on October 15th, 2009. Yeah, this one seems out of place a bit, like kind of thrown in there, like maybe it belongs in a different season. But I don't hate it.
What I was trying to sort out last night when I was watching this is, do I not like this episode because I don't like this episode in a vacuum, or because of its placement after the wedding, which, I mean, we both adore that episode. We talked about it last week because we're weekly now, which is fun. Mm-hmm. Is that why I don't like it? Because, like, we came off this like really high point in Niagara, and then this is what's next. And I think even in a vacuum, like, I just don't care for the storyline of this guy and Michael, but we can get to that because we got to talk about the cold open. But I don't know. It's not one of my favorites. And in doing some homework, office tally at the end of each season, people could rate, and this was third from the bottom for the season. So I feel vindicated in my dislike.
Yeah, it's almost like they didn't quite know what to do without Jim and Pam. But I don't know. I guess I just kind of accept that this episode exists. But yeah, I think that the cold open is kind of the best part of this episode.
Yeah, I do too. So it is, I guess, Michael like reliving his glory days because Jim's not there to tell him not to have a conference room meeting.
Oh, good point. Good point.
The second Jim's gone, he's in there. He's got a whiteboard. He has written fundamentals on the board, and mentals is underlined. And I feel like I failed. Last time there was a whiteboard, and so this time I paused it and like, computer enhance, and zoomed in. And then after I did all that, then Michael just read what was on the board, so I felt like I didn't need to enhance, but oh well.
I'm glad you did. So you can explain, paint the word picture of what was on the whiteboard.
Yeah, so it's fundamentals. Mentals is underlined. Michael is talking about sales tactics, and the three things he has written down is handshakes, small talk, and then the last one is shut up and sell. And, you know, he's saying, hey, you know, sales should be fun. You can implement these things. Toby is there for some reason. The only reason, I think, is to point out that he could have underlined fun in fundamentals.
The fundamentals of business. The fundamentals of business. Mental is a part of the word. I have underlined it. Because your mental, if you don't have a good time, you have to enjoy it.
You know, the fun is in it.
Fundamental.
Oh, right.
Get out.
I know.
And then Toby leaves.
Instead of like going step by step through the cold open, since we're talking about Toby, there is a part about Toby in here. And it is where Oscar mentions like later on in the episode that he's kind of like left, and that the people who usually represent reason have all gone because Jim and Pam are away on their honeymoon. And he mentions he's left with like a whole bunch of people without reason. And so like the tides are turning in this whole episode. And he mentions how Toby has checked out since June, I believe it was. Yes, mm-hmm. Says Toby's checked out since June. And then we see a talking head with Toby.
Oscar says I checked out, huh?
I'm wondering, does this timeline ...
No, he's not out strangling people. Come on.
He is out strangling. He's checked out. He's checked out because he's busy strangling. It is. You don't know. It could be. Maybe he's become numb to the killing.
Wow.
I mean, it could be. I just want to point that out. That's probably one of the moments where the conspiracy theorists like to grab on that talking head and that moment and that suggestion from Oscar about Toby's state of mind.
I think you're really, really reaching.
But like, why else would he have checked out?
I don't know. Because he's, you know, divorced. He's sad.
In love with Pam, who just got married.
He's in love with Pam, who just got married.
Could be.
We mentioned it in our Niagara episode, but there's like one little shot where he's talking to the camera. He's like, maybe this is it for them. And he looks really happy. And then they come running in behind him. Yeah.
That's it.
Brokenhearted. Again.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe that's just it. But I like the idea better that he's a strangler.
In small talk examples, this is where we get the Upper Decker. Meredith's like, let's talk about the weekend. And I was like, well, I caught my kid pooping in the upper part of the toilet. He calls it an upper decker.
I want to know and shake the hand of the writer who thought of that, because that visual to me, it's just so funny and so weird. And I've never heard of anything like that before. And it just, that's why I think it sticks around, because it's one of those great comedy moments where it's like, wow, that actually feels like a new funny joke, and it's really good.
You can kind of see somebody in your mind like perched up there.
Yeah, exactly. Especially a kid like her son, who needs more guidance in his life.
There you go.
Yeah.
Becomes a man stripper later.
Spoiler. So the main meat part of this episode, the Italian pork store part of this episode. Hey, I'm a New York Italian. It's okay. Is that there is an insurance salesman by the name of Grotti. And he comes by, Angelo Grotti. And he comes by to sell insurance to Michael. Now, this is like personal insurance that he's stopping by the office. Is he trying to sell like the office insurance? Because as he's doing his sales pitch, it is very much implied that he is kind of menacing. I think it's the tone of his voice. And it is saying like, well, accidents could happen. You never know. Right. You should buy this insurance.
God forbid you should have a fire in the warehouse.
Oh, yep. Yeah, definitely. All that paper burning up.
Yeah, and the truck goes off the side of the road. There's injury.
I hear you. The truck.
You will be hearing from me, Mr. Scott.
Okay, well.
I can be very, very persistent.
Do your worst.
With this tone, Dwight and Andy kind of grab onto it, and they get suspicious, and they think he is part of the mob, and that Michael is in the middle of a shakedown, essentially, that he's selling insurance and threatening destruction of things if he doesn't buy the insurance.
I do like the little touch that he knocks over the coat rack at Aaron's desk. And I think it's accidental, but maybe it's not. Again, kind of depending on how you view this character. And, you know, everyone is very jumpy and tense around this guy. And he's the other thing is, too, he's also like physically menacing. Like, he's a big guy. And Andy and Dwight are just convinced of this. I do think this is the first time we've seen Andy and Dwight kind of team up in a long time.
Well, they became friends.
Right.
When they were like enemies first, and then he's like, I got to know him and now he's my friend.
Yes.
And they had that one episode where they were scheming something.
Yeah. And then they both liked Aaron, and then they got in a banjo off. So anyway, it's been a little while since we've seen their end of their relationship, but they're convinced of this. And after Grotti leaves, they basically go in and they got to talk to Michael about this. They need to wisen him up to what's going on.
What happened in there?
Nothing other than, once again, I am just thankful that I am a paper salesman.
Did he threaten you?
No, Dwight, not everything is a threat.
Mobsters are.
There is no such thing as monsters.
He drives an SUV.
No, it's more trunk space, or should I say corpse space.
Okay, guys, I drive an SUV. Does that mean I'm in the mob?
No, not that by itself, but look at all the facts. He seems like a mobster.
We also have a moment where Ryan, you know, chimes in with this idea that this guy's mafia, but like he's such a well actually guy that he well actually is the mafia.
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as the mafia.
Okay.
What you have are specific families. Mm-hmm. What's the guy's last name?
It is Grotti.
Oh, oh no.
Oh boy. That is... What? What?
John Gotti, you idiot.
It's a completely different name.
So he won't get caught.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
What are you talking about? What mobster would change his name from Gotti to Grotti? It weakens it.
No, I disagree. R is among the most menacing of sounds. That's why they call it murder and not muckduck.
Okay, too many different words coming at me from too many different sentences.
I like the humor between Andy and Dwight. So we see Andy say, you know, when you're threatened, you should give in right away. Like that's his go-to move. It kind of reminded me of the line from Andy where he's like, you know, Andy Bernard either wins contest or quits them because they're unfair. We're just, it's up there with me. When you're threatened, you should give in right away. Dwight says, no, you got to stand up to this guy. Trust me, I've bullied a lot of people. You got to stand up to bullies.
There's a lot of funny, very quippy back and forths in this episode, and it starts right off with the cold open. So that holds the episode up for me more than anything else. I mean, there's even when Michael's in the main room and he's getting overwhelmed by everybody talking at him and making suggestions and kind of telling him what to do. He even has a moment where he says, there are too many different words coming at me from too many different sentences. And it's just like there are a lot of conspiracy theories about this guy. Mm-hmm. And so they make up a plan. So they come up with a plan, Dwight, Andy, and Michael, to meet Grotti in a public place.
Yes.
So that way he isn't cornered, because now they're worried about, like, the idea of the shakedown. If he doesn't buy the insurance, Grotti's coming after him. If he does, then he's just been bullied into buying insurance, mm-hmm. which is also not good. So when they plan to meet in this public place, they pick some restaurant, an Italian restaurant,
obviously,
to, you know, make Grotti comfortable. I don't know. And Andy shows up dressed as a mechanic in loafers.
Yeah, because he wants to carry a tire iron in case it comes to blows. It's like the thought of Andy bludgeoning anybody is really funny.
What are you wearing? Whose hat?
If I'm going to back you up, I need a weapon without drawing suspicion, and I have to justify it somehow, so I'm a mechanic with a tire thing.
Do you know how to use it?
To change tires, no, but it's metal. I can hit somebody with it.
Come on. God.
Should I change?
You're wearing loafers. Forget it. Forget it.
I mean, honestly, like, he makes these choices that seem ridiculous, but they stem from a logical place.
Oh, yeah. No, it makes sense. Like, you can't just waltz into a restaurant with a tire iron. I mean, who hasn't tried that? And so, yeah, he needs some sort of cover. It's also kind of like a high-end place. Like, you know, it's like a business lunch type place. And he's in coveralls, which is funny.
But with loafers.
But with loafers.
Mean, the loafers really pull it together.
I have a lot of questions where it came from. It has the name Pat, like, sewn onto it. So somewhere Pat got robbed, or maybe he found it at a thrift store. I don't know. Maybe he just had it.
It kind of backfires on him throughout the lunch, because someone ends up coming up to him and asking for help. It's like lying about saying you're a doctor. It's that kind of bit where it's like, oh, we need a doctor. Hey, this person's a doctor. And it's a total lie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this woman comes up with her kid and the old Toyota station wagon she's driving, which I absolutely love. It's got a dead battery. He's like, oh, no, you know, I can't, you know. I don't want to do it or whatever. And Grotti's like, no, like, you go help her. And so he does. And Andy clearly has never jump-started a car. And sparks go everywhere. And he's like, oh, yeah, like, your spark tube is broken. And just, like, makes up words and then runs away.
Well, he says he works exclusively on motorcycles.
On motorcycles, yes.
Mm-hmm. Good cover, Andy.
Good work. I think they jumped the same way, but it's poor. And at the very end, we see this woman having her car towed. Like, it's so terrible, Andy.
But at least his cover wasn't totally blown. But he goes back to the lunch, and the lunch continues that, like, intimidation shakedown. As soon as Grotti shows up, he kind of pulls that, like, machismo. Oh, we're not going to sit at this table. We're going to go sit at this other table. There is the great line of when Grotti is ordering and he is very menacing when it comes to demanding his sauce on the side.
You know, I'll have the linguine, red sauce on the side. If the sauce does not come on the side, I will send it back. I want garlic bread, toasted, not burnt. If it comes burnt, I will send it back.
Okay, then.
And Michael grabs onto that and repeats it for himself in a totally wrong way, which I think is really funny.
I will have the spaghetti with a side salad.
Okay.
If the salad is on top, I send it back.
I mean, come on. You got to tell me that that's not one of the things that you say as like an office quote. If it's not on the side, I send it back.
I send it back.
And Michael also...
Marco.
He's Italian.
That's racist.
It's not. Michael also tries to order the gabagool.
Gabagool.
And for you, sir?
I will have the gabagool.
The what?
The gabagool.
I don't really know what that is.
You know, gabagool.
I don't have to have
what
that.
What he's trying to say is gabagool.
Guys,
ghoul.
Guys,
all right. I don't really think that we have that.
That's okay.
Bring in the gabagool.
Which I'm pretty sure is, I think it's supposed to be Capricola.
Yes.
But it ends up being pronounced, and it sounds like gabagool.
Yeah.
But gabagool. It's not. No.
It is made from Capricola? The dry cured muscle running from the neck, from the fourth to fifth rib of pork, shoulder, or neck.
There you go. I was like, it's some sort of dried meat that you get. That's all I know. I know Capricola. But yeah, it does sound like gabagool. He tries to order that. No one knows what he's talking about because obviously this Italian restaurant is spaghetti focused.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. So when all is said and done at the restaurant, they're just absolutely convinced that this guy's mafia. They're going to shake up that he's going to hurt them in some way if he doesn't sign. So Michael reluctantly signs and he goes back to the office completely defeated.
Yeah, we don't see him signed, but we see all this tension at the table. They're walking out, and Michael's like, you know, it was a snap decision. It took a long time. It was a series of snap decisions. Apparently, it's also the cost of a cup of coffee an hour. So I was like, well, if, I don't know, how much is a cup of coffee? Like, how much could a banana cost?
$10?
Sure. So let's say it's $5, you know, that's $120 a day. Times 7 days a week, that's $840 a week. Times 52, that's $43,000 a year.
Whoa.
Dude got shaken down.
Yeah. I mean, okay, even if Grotti isn't mafia, which he probably isn't, he's really leaning into the intimidation in his sales strategies. And it kind of upsets me. It makes me really angry that this guy can just like come on in, shake down like this average, you know, paper salesman manager for that much money and like walk away and feel okay about it. It doesn't rub me right the right way. It's bad.
Yeah.
Regardless of how you look at it.
Yeah. And that's kind of where this ends up going. And so they all get back to the office and Michael finds Oscar and says, hey, you know, what can I do? I signed up for something that I can't afford. Of course, Oscar knows what it is. He says, well, he's got to call and cancel. And Michael says he can't do that. Dwight overhears this and goes to tell Andy that it's Andy's fault. Not their fault collectively. It's Andy's fault.
We have let Michael down, and it's 85% your fault.
He's alive, so you're welcome.
Not on the inside, he's not. Look at his life. Broke. Living in fear. No friends. Dead-end job.
Yeah, some of that existed before.
Not the living in fear. That's new.
You're right. That is new.
Yes.
Like, that's not all my fault.
Yeah. Some of that is pre-existing conditions. But they come up with this plan. It's a pretty good plan that we're going to go in and tell Michael that basically what you just said, that Grotti just plays this character to make sales. He's just pushy and you haven't been shaken down. He's not the mob. You call and cancel because he's just a salesman who, you know, force his way in here.
They back it up with these lies that Andy called a friend at the FBI. Like they're actually like giving essentially evidence that, like, oh yeah, we checked his background, turns out he's not mafia, and they're trying to, like, be good friends and give Michael some confidence back.
Yeah. And then Dwight's like, yeah, I've got friends on the force, and they checked out Andy's FBI guy, turns out he's a sweetheart. You know, it's like, okay, you're trying a little hard here.
But Michael loves it. Michael totally buys it, and he's like, oh okay, I don't have to be afraid. And then he, you know, he gets his confidence back, and he calls up to cancel, and he does it in an equally menacing way, but it's more like a how dare you.
I think you knew exactly what you were doing, and frankly, I think you were being a total and utter jerk.
Ooh. Okay.
You suck.
Okay, that's
and I'm not going to buy your stupid insurance.
That's good.
How about that?
Okay.
The only person that actually needs insurance is you if you show your face around here again. Got it?
Look, Michael, when we all calm down here, maybe at some point in the future you change your mind, why don't you give me a call?
Doubt it.
He, like, aggressively, like, hangs up on him, cancels it, and he feels great about himself. And that's when Andy and Dwight reveal, oh, you shut down the mob. You just talked about the mob.
What?
You successfully backed down the mob. You made the mafia apologize to you. You made the mafia be polite.
Oh, man. I should be mad at you guys, but I'm not.
And so he goes back out into the office to recount the tales of his bravery.
Yeah, which he greatly exaggerates.
Do you expect anything less?
No. And look, if you shake down the mob, I think you have some boasting you can do.
And after that, we never hear from Grotti again. That's kind of it.
One and done.
But there is a bit of a B plot going on in this episode, and it involves Kevin. I feel like we're getting a little bit of... In this episode, we see a lot of Oscar and we see a lot of Kevin, mm-hmm. which is nice because we haven't seen a ton of them. We were seeing more of them during the wedding. And now I guess, like, this episode, if you want to think about how it connects, we're still kind of following a little bit more about Kevin and Oscar than we have in previous episodes. So Kevin takes it upon himself to start using Jim's office for
farting.
Various reasons. Oh, see, I was in my house to my mom, farting was the F word.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, it always is a little bit hard for me to say, even though I'm totally fine with saying the word farting. But I'm always like, ooh, if my mom hears this, I'm going to be in trouble. But yeah, so Kevin goes into Jim's office to fart and he just never leaves. He decides to stay.
Jim's gone on his honeymoon. So I started borrowing his office to fart in. Then one day, I came in, and I just stayed, because this place is awesome. It feels like home now, even better than my home. My home sucks.
He moves his M&Ms into the office, and he kind of settles in.
Look, it's small, but it's more private than where he was, and I feel like Kevin's a guy who wants to work with the door closed sometimes.
I like how it's Kevin who takes it upon himself to kind of, like, squat.
Yeah.
In Jim's office.
Yeah.
I would think that was a Creed move, but maybe Creed's too lazy.
Creed would, like, have someone else haul a couch in there, and there'd be a disco ball, and, yeah, so Kevin's in there, and the phone rings, right? And it's, Capital One. I guess Jim and Pam's credit card is through them, and they say, oh, you know, we have some, you know, charges on your card that, you know, are suspicious. I guess Jim has left behind a bill or some sort of paperwork on his desk so Kevin can confirm the address and the social security number. He says, well, Mr. Halpert, you're not in Puerto Rico, which is where we know Pam and Jim are, because earlier Oscar called them to, like, loop them into all of this, and they basically just hung up on him. Michael called him. They hung up on him. Like, okay, well, you're not in Puerto Rico. Clearly, you're at home in Scranton, so we'll just cancel that card and send you a new one. And Kevin's like, oh, no. And it's too late.
This is one of those plot lines that annoy me. I hate miscommunication plot lines because it's like, he had plenty of time. He had plenty of time to say, like, no, wait, no. Or I don't know. They just, I feel like this is the weakest problem that you can write.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think, like, this part of the episode even though, like, yeah, it connects a little bit to Jim and Pam over in Puerto Rico. We have, like, more reasons for them to, like, be calling back or, like, annoyed or figuring things out or, like, having some sort of connection with them. But, yeah, miscommunication plot lines are definitely, like, on the very bottom of my list.
That's fair.
Yeah, don't like it.
Yeah. And we hear a little bit from him. You know, Michael calls for advice. And again, they play the thing of like, oh, we can't hear you. We're hanging up.
I think I'm in trouble with the mob or a major insurance carrier.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, I know. And you usually can get out of stuff like this. So I'm turning to you, my friend.
I'm going to help you through it. All right.
Okay.
All you're going to need to. And then go to.
Jim, are you.
And you'll be saved.
What? Wait, I didn't hear a thing you just said.
Just, and then you'll be saved.
No, God, I missed the important part again. No, oh my God.
And you'll be saved.
No, Jim, please repeat what you're saying. I can't understand you.
Bermuda Triangle. Please don't call again.
Jim? Oh my God.
Michael did use his trick of faking an emergency. You know, he did that to get to David Wallace in the past. And he says, oh, I told them that, you know, someone had had a heart attack and you said your, you know, your dad had health problems. So it's like, well, come on, man. It's like, we're on a boat. How did you get this phone number?
Michael uses the tricks that work because they work and he's able to, you know, get communication through. I do like that Jim continues to prank even from Puerto Rico, that he fakes static and he's trying to tell Michael exactly what to do, and Michael is so frustrated that he can't hear Jim because he really thinks that Jim is giving him the proper advice, and that's pretty funny. I like that part. But yeah, the whole thing with Kevin and then their credit card gets canceled, it's a little much. I feel bad for them. I'm like, oh, they can't even escape like the little bit. I wouldn't have minded if the writers just kind of let Jim and Pam have a honeymoon mm-hmm. away without involving them in the comedy of The Office. I think that maybe that's another problem with this episode, is that it feels like that's really reaching. It's kind of, it's forcing this interaction with these two characters that we love, and we just saw their wedding and it was a fantastic episode, and we're trying to kind of like keep them involved in this fake manufactured way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't dig it. Now that we're talking about it, I'm liking this episode less and less.
Sorry.
Stupid episode.
Well, you better hope the episode doesn't come by your house and break a bunch of windows.
Oh, harsh.
Let's end on a high note.
I love high notes.
How about that? We have a Dundee. We have a Dundee to award to listener Matthew. We spoke about the chart Jim made of how Michael spends his time, and I lamented that I didn't have a copy of it anymore. I didn't do anything about that. You think I could have just opened Safari quietly as we were recording and find it, but I didn't. Matthew did the hard work though, and so Matthew, come on down to win the most graphiest graph award.
Congratulations, Matthew. And he shared that with us in our incomparable member Slack, the conference room. So I will be I guess I'll tweet out the graph that he found so that everyone else can see it on our Twitter account at @tall_beats. And yeah, that's where you can find us, is on Twitter or in various places like The Incomparable. And until then, again, I don't know what we're until then-ing, but I'm going to keep saying it because I just can't stop. I'm a creature of habit. But we'll be back. Yeah, we just have a little song. I don't know, something. But we'll be back next week talking about the next episode, The Lover.
Come in the conference room and I will show you a finished sausage.